Blog Talk Radio.
Instead of arresting those blocking the entrance, They arrest the person trying to deliver the petitions, Alexis Baden-Meyer from the Organic Consumers Association.
And some of the related articles to this is a consumer, organicconsumerassociation.org. I can go to.
Multiple routes of pesticide exposure for honeybees living near agricultural fields. New studies finds widespread pesticide contamination of beehives.
That's at the gmo-journal.com.
Honeybee disappearance, the GMO connection.
Right.
Study says insecticides used with GMO corn highly toxic to bees.
That's on foodfreedom.wordpress.com.
And why GMO food isn't kosher. Website, jc.com.
No, website. Dot DJC.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
Russian scientists discover GMO causes animals to lose their ability to reproduce, and that is from geochange-report.org. Russia halts imports of Monsanto corn over fears of cancer, and that's from rt.com/business/news/Russia-MO.
Russia halts imports of GMO corn after cancer study.
That's from salon.com.
Yeah. www.salon.com. So anyway, okay.
So those are a lot of articles based on studies about
GMOs and mm-hmm. trying to, you know. And, I mean, this, what's-her-face, White House...
Michelle Obama.
I mean, it would make sense that she would be...
I would think she'd be interested with her push on healthy food.
Having her husband appoint the lobbyist for Monsanto to the FDA just amazes me. But, everything else does, too.
Video showing...
Yeah, I wanted to play that, and I wanted to do that now.
Video showing the huge gap between the super rich and everyone else goes viral. So this is only about 6 minutes, but it's very good. I haven't watched it, but Leo has. He said it's really excellent.
Yeah, it was. And, it has visuals with it, but obviously, but...
You're not going to be missing anything.
Yeah.
The audio is
There's a chart
really
I saw
good.
Recently that I can't get out of my head. A Harvard business professor and economist asked more than 5,000 Americans how they thought wealth was distributed in the United States. This is what they said they thought it was. Dividing the country into five rough groups of the top, bottom, and middle three 20% groups, they asked people how they thought the wealth in this country was divided. Then he asked them what they thought was the ideal distribution. And 92%, that's at least 9 out of 10 of them, said it should be more like this. In other words, more equitable than they think it is. Now, that fact is telling, admittedly, the notion that most Americans know that the system is already skewed unfairly. But what's most interesting to me is the reality compared to our perception. The ideal is as far removed from our perception of reality as the actual distribution is from what we think exists in this country. So ignore the ideal for a moment. Here's what we think it is again. And here is the actual distribution. Shockingly skewed. Not only do the bottom 20% and the next 20%, the bottom 40% of Americans barely have any of the wealth. I mean, it's hard to even see them on the chart. But the top 1% has more of the country's wealth than 9 out of 10 Americans believe the entire top 20% should have. Mind-blowing. But let's look at it another way, because I find this chart kind of difficult to wrap my head around. Instead, let's reduce the 311 million Americans to just a representative 100 people. Make it simple. Here they are. Teachers, coaches, firefighters, construction workers, engineers, doctors, lawyers, some investment bankers, a CEO, maybe a celebrity or two. Now let's line them up according to their wealth. Poorest people on the left, wealthiest on the right, just a steady row of folks based on their net worth. We'll color code them like we did before based on which 20% quintile they fall into. Now, let's reduce the total wealth of the United States, which was roughly $54 trillion in 2009, to this symbolic pile of cash. And let's distribute it among our 100 Americans. Well, here's socialism, all the wealth of the country distributed equally. We all know that won't work. We need to encourage people to work and work hard to achieve that good old American dream and keep our country moving forward. So, here's that ideal we asked everyone about, something like this curve. This isn't too bad. We've got some incentive, as the wealthiest folks are now about 10 to 20 times better off than the poorest Americans. But hey, even the poor folks aren't actually poor, since the poverty line has stayed almost entirely off the chart. We have a super healthy middle class with a smooth transition into wealth. And yes, Republicans and Democrats alike chose this curve. 9 out of 10 people, 92%, said this was a nice, ideal distribution of America's wealth. But let's move on. This is what people think America's wealth distribution actually looks like. Not as equitable, clearly, but for me, even this still looks pretty great. Yes, the poorest 20 to 30% are starting to suffer quite a lot compared to the ideal, and the middle class is certainly struggling more than they were, while the rich and wealthy are making roughly 100 times that of the poorest Americans and about 10 times that of the still healthy middle class. Sadly, this isn't even close to the reality. Here is the actual distribution of wealth in America. The poorest Americans don't even register. They're down to pocket change, and the middle class is barely distinguishable from the poor. In fact, even the rich between the top 10 and 20 percentile are worse off. Only the top 10% are better off. And how much better off? So much better off that the top 2 to 5% are actually off the chart at this scale. And the top 1%, this guy, well, his stack of money stretches 10 times higher than we can show. Here's his stack of cash, restacked, all by itself. This is the top 1% we've been hearing so much about. So much green in his pockets that I have to give him a whole new column of his own because he won't fit on my chart. 1% of America has 40% of all the nation's wealth. The bottom 80%, 8 out of every 10 people, or 80 out of these 100, only has 7% between them. And this has only gotten worse in the last 20 to 30 years. While the richest 1% take home almost a quarter of the national income today, in 1976, they took home only 9%, meaning their share of income has nearly tripled in the last 30 years. The top 1% owned half the country's stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. The bottom 50% of Americans own only 0.5% of these investments, which means they aren't investing. They're just scraping by. I'm sure many of these wealthy people have worked very hard for their money. But do you really believe that the CEO is working 380 times harder than his average employee? Not his lowest paid employee, not the janitor, but the average earner in his company. The average worker needs to work more than a month to earn what the CEO makes in 1 hour. We certainly don't have to go all the way to socialism to find something that is fair for hardworking Americans. We don't even have to achieve what most of us consider might be ideal. All we need to do is wake up and realize that the reality in this country is not at all what we think it is.
That's a bit scary.
Yes.
When you folks at home couldn't see the graphics, but the auditory was very good. But when you looked at the graph, it was like, where am I? I'm not even in there.
Yeah.
I'm just like a little tiny speck somewhere at the way at the end at the bottom.
Yes. But here we go.
That's all of us working, folks. That's where we are.
Yeah. So let's see. This is from Natural News.
This is kind of interesting.
Grocery loyalty card purchases surveyed by insurance companies to raise rates and deny claims. Now, why would they be able to have access to that?
I don't know whether they do yet.
Well,
I think they're thinking about it.
I mean, you know, that's not right. That's like a Stop and Shop card or a any card, you know, any like Kohl's or any of those cards, Lowe's or, you know, whatever card, you know.
Well, how can they do that if you're in a group plan?
Well,
they can't.
I don't know. No, well, they have individual things. Well, let's read about it. Anyway, I warned Natural News readers about this years ago. Those grocery store loyalty cards that they push on you to enjoy discounts on groceries are actually a behavior surveillance technology that's used to capture and profile your grocery purchasing patterns. This data is then sold off to insurance companies who use it to raise your rates by linking your grocery purchase with the risk of disease. I mean, this is such a violation of privacy. It's unbelievable. Buying a lot of ice cream, you're more likely to be obese and diabetic. Purchasing a lot of processed meats and homogenized milk, you're more likely to develop cardiovascular disease. Bringing home a lot of processed foods with additives, chemical sweeteners, and chemical preservatives, you're far more likely to get cancer. Health insurance companies are now using the data to develop these sorts of risk profiles of individual consumers. And it's all enabled because people are so incredibly obedient that they actually fill out their real names and addresses on these grocery card loyalty cards. Health insurance companies simply use credit reporting databases to link your grocery loyalty card account to your health insurance account number, and from there, your insurance rates can be adjusted based on what you buy to eat. Isn't that freaking amazing?
Even worse, they can use this data to deny your health insurance claims. For example, if you get diagnosed with cancer, your health insurance company can look through your grocery purchasing history and show that you bought processed meats containing cancer-causing sodium nitrate. They can use this data to deny payment on your claims and push the blame on you for living a cancer lifestyle. I've never heard of any of this, so...
From cancer, from conspiracy theory to conspiracy fact. When I first reported on this a decade ago, I was called a conspiracy theorist for daring the white to write about the absurd idea that grocery store purchase data would be used against you. But now, in the age of total police state surveillance of your search engines, quote, queries, cell phone texts, bank transactions, and emails, and web surfing behavior, the idea that corporations are purchasing your groceries, purchase surveillance data, is no longer just a theory. It's a conspiracy fact. Marketing firms have sold this data to retailers and credit card companies for years, and health plans have recently discovered that they can use it to augment claim data. This was reported by the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, and the title of that article, by the way, is How the Insurers Knows You Just Stocked Up on Ice Cream and Beer. It opens with this paragraph.
Your company already knows whether you have been taking your meds, getting your teeth cleaned, and going for regular medical checkups. Now some employers or their insurance companies are tracking what staffers eat, where they shop, and how much weight they are putting on, and taking action to keep them in line. This is all reported in a ho-hum, matter-of-fact manner. There is no cry of conspiracy theorists. There are no accusations that the Wall Street Journal is fear-mongering over a fabricated bit of fictional news. Nope. In 2013, this news is simply accepted as normal. This is how things work in our world. When people like myself or Alex Jones first warn you about what's coming, we're called conspiracy theorists and told that whatever we're talking about doesn't exist. Later, once it becomes obvious that the things we were talking about does indeed exist, the accusation changes to, well, you should like it. That's what we're hearing about grocery shopping loyalty cards now. Yes, it's all admitted that they are tracking your grocery purchase behavior, and it's all admitted that this surveillance data is being sold off to countless corporations who use that data to spy on your eating habits and maybe even deny you health insurance claims. But now you're supposed to accept it as normal and not question it. What kind of cook wants anonymity in their grocery purchases anyway, the thinking goes. How corporations spy on the most intimate parts of your life. The thing is, when they aggregate your purchase data, they easily determine all sorts of very private things about your life. They know whether you have pets or children. They even know very private personal things like when you purchase a pregnancy test or the fact that you're using hair coloring products. They know which brands you prefer, how many coupons you use, and even when you're planning a party. All this information can and will be used to target you with not just marketing messages, but potentially to raise your insurance rates or even fire you from your job because you're a heart attack risk. Yep, just wait for your employer to get their hands on all this information. It's already begun, in fact, as the Wall Street Journal reports.
Some critics worry that the methods cross the line between protective and invasive and could lead to job discrimination. Dr. Deborah Peel, founder of Patient Privacy Rights, worries employers could conceivably make other conclusions about people who load up the cart with butter and sugar. When you use grocery loyalty cards, you allow the corporate morgue to invade your private life and pry into your most private activities inside your home. It's not about saving you money. It's about the grocery store making money by selling the most private, intimate details of your life to any number of unethical corporations, all of which are drooling over the possibility of using this information against you in some insidious way. My run-in with a cart pusher. About a decade ago, I had a repeat run-in with a loyalty cart pusher at a loyal grocery store.
At a local grocery store.
This cashier, a 50-something semi-bearded man, knew I always paid with cash and always refused a loyalty card, and over time this began to infuriate him. He kept insisting that I should sign up for the card because otherwise I was throwing money away. The idea of privacy protection never entered his mind, of course. He had no clue what his own employer was doing with all the data. Well, eventually, just to play along with the guy, one day I said, okay, I'll fill it out this time. I filled it out with a false name and no address, making sure that nothing could be linked to my real name and address. This satisfied the cashier's insistence that I stopped throwing money away, but it also protected my privacy from the prying eyes of corporate marketeers and insurance companies. And this is the solution for everyone. Fill out the cards if you want, but use false names. And never use your real name on retailer loyalty cards. It'll change yours.
Huh.
We have fun with this. Resist the grocery surveillance agenda by using funny, inappropriate names such as Chris P. Bacon, Oliver Klozoff, Haywood Jablomi. What's funny with that? Did I spell that wrong? Haywood Jablomi. Oh, Haywood.
Haywood Jablomi.
Okay.
Pat McGroy, he works with the TSA,
and
Jack Hoff.
Yeah, Pat McGroy, Jack Hoff, Haywood just blow me, I guess, and Oliver Klozoff, Christopher P. Bacon. Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess you could use those. Remember, there is no requirement that you give them your real names and address to sign up for their loyalty cards. Let them have fun trying to find the health insurance policy for Haywood
Jablomi,
yeah. You can also, you can only imagine the corporate phone conversation. Hello, this is Kevin from Data Resource International. We're looking for a match on the name from your database. What's the name? Haywood Jablomi. Pause. Do you have any phone manners?
What do you mean? Well, I asked for what your name you were looking for, and you said, hey, Wood, just blow me. Yes, I mean, no, nah, there you go again. But that's his name. What's his name? Hey, Wood, just blow me. No, and stop asking, and so on. See, you can turn grocery store loyalty cards into much-needed comic relief. This is one way you give the system the shaft and walk away with your privacy intact.
Yes. So good. give him a phony name. Chris Bacon. Is good.
Or
just blew me.
Yeah.
So what you okay. Okay, that was kind of fun.
Or Hugh Jeff.
Hugh.
Who are you? Hugh Jeff.
Yeah. Can I speak to Hugh Jazz, please? Yes, and who else?
That's all from The Simpsons.
Those are fun. There was a little video I wanted to play here. Russian TV.
What was that one on?
It was on.
Might be on the second page.
Oh.
Oh, there it is. This one.
That's
on Chemtrail.
Yeah, it's 30 minutes. I thought of playing that, but
this one right there. AIPAC is lobbying America to go to war with Iran. Israel seeks to bolster U.S. ties at annual AIPAC policy conference.
There you go. It's about 4 minutes, as by Russian TV.
Israel could become the first of a nation to enjoy the status of America's major strategic ally, which could mean getting the backing of the U.S. should Israel decide to attack Iran. Now, this is going to be among the issues discussed on Sunday when thousands representing America's pro-Israel lobby will gather in the U.S. Capitol for the annual AIPAC conference. More on this then. From geopolitical analyst Patrick Henningsen is joining us on the line. Hi there, Patrick. If Israel cements its alliance with the U.S., where would America draw the line in terms of keeping its boisterous ally, for want of a better word, in check, do you think?
Well, this latest diplomatic move, as everyone can see, and what's really happening here is Israel has re-entered the fray as a political spoiler, because as we know, the U.S. and some noises coming out of Washington, there is quite a large contingent within the United States that is looking to perhaps get into diplomatic negotiation with Iran and not be talking abrasively as they have in previous years. And Israel has entered the fray. The Israeli lobby is really putting pressure on those politicians in America to take a more Israeli line, which is a more hardcore line that has to do with perhaps inflaming a war with Iran.
How would bolstering strategic ties with Israel affect America's standing in the Arab world? How would it go down? I mean, could the U.S. be left to deal with severe consequences because of Israel's political ambitions, you think?
So look at the Arab world as a whole, the Arab League. You know, Saudi Arabia and Israel don't have any problems with each other, as we know, because those two countries are more concerned with, well, Saudi is concerned money and security and stability in Israel, and Saudi act as a proper counterweight for each other in the Middle East. But there's not going to be a massive change. The big change here that we're looking at is a shift. There is a shift away from this kind of blind allegiance to Israel that is on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. There are splits appearing because Americans are realizing that it's not in their best interest, it's not in American interest to follow Israel's agenda. So therefore, AIPAC it's not beneficial for AIPAC to be running the government in Washington anymore as they have for the past 30 years.
And the other impact is going to impact, I guess, on those international nuclear talks with Iran. Recently, we saw a glimmer of hope. They talked about having more talks ahead. What kind of impact would a reinforced U.S.-Israeli partnership have on attempts to find common ground with that, then?
It would have a negative impact. What Israel is trying to do here is you notice how Israel is laid very quiet during the Syrian uprising. And that is because Israel is looking for its chance to get what it can from this particular unrest north of its border in Syria. And what Israel's looking for is to increase its land holdings. So Israel will be looking to seize the Golan Heights and keep it as a quote-unquote security zone for Israeli defense. And of course, in the Golan Heights, we have oil licenses, which have come into the news in recent weeks. Also, we have water resources, which Israel needs very badly. So it's a bit of an opportunism agenda with regards to Israel in Syria. And, of course, the deal with Iran is also just to keep America in a permanent state of conflict over in the Middle East as well. And doing that backing Israel and whatever is Israel's agenda.
And of course, Patrick, other practicalities come in, like the money it costs on top of the sequester, the financial side of this. We're just seeing spending cuts now taking huge effect in the U.S. Where would the money to support Israel's agenda come from then?
Well, as everyone knows by now, IPAC, the American Israeli Political Action Committee, the cost of their influence over Washington is approximately $1 billion U.S. They run it out of check for every Congress senator who's running for office, not just the ones who win. They back everybody so that they are loyal to Israel.
I asked the families living in the locust-plagued areas not to burn fires. This does not chase away locusts, but only causes damage and could ignite large-scale fires that could cost them lives. Also, that smoke isn't doing Egypt's grandchildren any favors. The scientists anticipate that as global warming worsens, plagues like this will also get worse. And,
here's a video.
It's really, and it's bizarre as hell.
So see what they have to say. The pictures are disgusting. I mean, they must get in your face. Chavez, a controversial leftist revolutionary who rose to become president of Venezuela on failed promises of elevating the poor, died on Tuesday afternoon, according to his vice president, a likely successor. See, this is a, you can tell this is a slanted, very slanted article against him, but Chavez had been battling cancer since 2011, for which he underwent months of treatment in Cuba. Before returning home to the country, he ignited as much as he divided the rest of the world. He was 58 years old. Wasn't very old. After months of secrecy, the Venezuelan government announced earlier on Tuesday that Chavez's condition had worsened. Before Maduro took the airwaves to accuse an Air Force attache of plotting to poison Chavez, and then, with a tear, to announce Chavez's passing. The Venezuelan Constitution requires the government to hold an election for the country's next president within 30 days. In the interim, Maduro will serve the country as the country's president. Despite a vocal opposition, he may be installed permanently. And they've shown a few pictures here. Philip Bump takes a photo tour through a rose gallery of Chavez and his famous photo op friends, which may explain some of the right-wing rage below. Stay tuned right here into Reuters live coverage for the latest.
Well, here's the picture of him and Roosevelt.
He shows a picture of him as a young man, picture with Castro, and picture with Libya's
Gaddafi. And
yeah.
Says something just to tell that he says to tune in to Reuters line of coverage. But there's some comments here.
Michael Moynihan at the Daily Beast takes a long view of Chavez's legacy. This was Chavez's reign and his legacy, extra legal, vindictive, and interested in the short-term gesture rather than the more difficult long-term solution. From his revolutionary comrades in Cuba, he borrowed the slogan, Patria Socialismo o Muerte, fatherland socialism or death. He hit a deep vein. Here's another from the Francisco Toro at the Atlantic. He hit a deep vein of gratitude not only because a torrid oil boom allowed him to channel billions to his supporters, but because his rhetoric of a failed radical empowerment made them feel value in ways that no other leader ever had before. It's just that over the past 14 years, he exploited that vein even more ruthlessly, stripping the people's affection for the gratification of a monstrously overgrown ego and dismantling the institutions of democratic life in the process. Well, I don't know about that. That's their opinion.
Yeah, and then the State Department, which is interesting, Patrick Ventrell responded to allegations by Vice President Nicolas Maduro that a U.S. operative was plotting against Chavez and the Venezuelan government.
We completely reject the Venezuelan government's claim that the United States is involved in any type of conspiracy to destabilize the Venezuelan government. We reject the specific allegations against members of our embassy. Notwithstanding the significant differences between our governments, we continue to believe it is important to see the co-functional and a more productive relationship with Venezuela based on issues of mutual interest. This fallacious assertion of inappropriate U.S. action leads us to conclude that, unfortunately, the current Venezuelan government is not interested in improved relationship. An assertion that the United States was somehow involved in causing President Chavez's illness is absurd, and we definitely reject it. The United States has options of reciprocal action available to it under the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations.
And this is the statement of President Obama on the death of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. At this challenging time of President Chavez's passing, the United States reaffirms its support for the Venezuelan people and its interest in developing a constructive relationship with the Venezuelan government. As Venezuela begins a new chapter in its history, the United States remains committed to policies that promote democratic principles, rule of law, and respect for human rights. Yeah, right. Make me gag.
Bloomberg knows Chavez's caffeine. I guess he was addicted to coffee. Known for a work schedule that often involved 40 cups of coffee a day and cabinet meetings lasting past midnight, Chavez slowed down his furious pace in 2011 after a knee injury sidelined him from a regional tour.
Wow, 40 cups a day.
Whoa, no wonder he got sick.
And then the New York Times says, his government would not even say which official resident he might be sleeping in, although his aides did reveal that he smoked cigarettes in private and enjoyed coffee. At one point early in his presidency, he consumed as many as 26 cups of espresso a day.
Oh, my God. Congress Jose Serrano has released an updated statement in support of Chavez. President Chavez was a controversial leader, but at his core, he was a man who came from very little and used his unique talents and gifts to try to lift up the people and the communities that reflected his impoverished roots. He believes that the government of his country should be used to empower the masses, not the few. Now, that's true. I agree with that.
Representative Jose Serrano. I don't know if he's one of our reps, but he says Hugo Chavez was a leader that understood the needs of the poor. He was committed to empowering the powerless. Rest in peace, Mr. President. Is he the new VP?
No.
Serrano?
No, Mendero.
Mendero is the
Jennifer Bendery.
GOP Rep. Edward Royce on Hugo Chavez. Good riddance to this dictator.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of
people have all kinds of views on him. he did try to help the poor people of his country. Now, he probably had a big ego. People like that generally do. But people who don't help anybody have a big ego. At least he tried to help someone.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk bad on you. I always think that he was better than most dictators. You want to go to a quick music, or you want to just finish up for what?
We could have a small music break while we find.
Yeah, I want to play this one because I thought that was quite frightening for, especially for the Britain people. But
for the British people.
People.
Well, it's probably no different here. Let's go to that.
Sure, it's probably just a bad year.
Go right to it, please.
And then we can sleep at that time.
Go right to
that.
This is interesting. It talks about...
Yeah, growing number of diabetic patients.
And other illnesses, too. This is from Mail Online. Now, 1 in 20 of us has diabetes. Cases rise by more than a third in 6 years.
Let me get this
a little bigger. And this is Mail Online and by Jenny Hope. 1 in 20 Britons is suffering from diabetes as a result of soaring obesity rates, a shocking study has found. The number diagnosed with the disease has risen by more than a third since 2006. Some 132,000 patients were found to have the condition in the last year, adding to the 2,912,000 existing sufferers in 2011. This brings the total to 3.04 million, 4.6% of the UK population, compared with 2.2 million 6 years ago. Wow. And a further 850,000 people are thought to have undiagnosed type 2 diabetes, according to an analysis of official data. The soaring rate of type 2, which mostly affects middle-aged people, is being blamed on obesity. 9 out of 10 people with diabetes have type 2, which occurs when the body gradually loses the ability to process blood sugar, which can damage the organs and lead to years of ill health. It is strongly linked to lifestyles such as being overweight or obese, leading a sedentary lifestyle, and eating an unhealthy diet.
It is strongly linked to lifestyle factors. You already read that.
Such as being overweight or obese. Yep.
Yeah. Barbara Young, Chief Executive of Diabetes UK, said, we are hugely concerned that the number of people diagnosed with diabetes has reached 3 million for the first time, and there is no reason to think that this mark will mark the end of what has been a rapid rise. All the projections suggest there will be a grim staging post for the road toward a public health emergency, and this unfolding tragedy is already putting huge pressure on the NHS and will have potentially devastating consequences for those people who develop the condition. But this is not inevitable. By identifying those at high risk of developing type 2 diabetes, we can ensure that they start getting support to make the kind of lifestyle changes that can be helped prevent it, and to make sure people who have type 1 or 2 diabetes are already getting the care and support they need. We can help them avoid the devastating complications diabetes can cause. And it just says the figures mark the launch of a national partnership between Diabetes UK and Tesco, which aims to raise $10 million, the biggest donation ever pledged to the charity. The partnership will fund the biggest ever public awareness campaign on type 2 diabetes risk factors, aimed to reach the estimated 7 million people at high risk, and will fund research into the vaccine for type 1 diabetes, which occurs when the body doesn't produce insulin at all. And diabetes may have been responsible for the frostbite that was forced the explorer Sir Reynold Fiennes.
The guy in the Arctic there.
Yeah, to pull out of an expedition across Antarctica. He said that a medical checkup he had before he left the UK indicated that he was on the verge of a type 2 diabetes in the boy. He said the surgeon who examined his frostbitten hand suggested that a recent change in my bodily system, it could have gone from any area of my body that was susceptible to circulation changes.
Mm.
So, it's interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, not to stand out in the cold if you have diabetes.
Yeah, it's just amazing that it's growing so quickly, so fast around the world. It's because of what...
Well, they introduced McDonald's over there.
Yeah. What we're eating.
This is your brain on NutraSweet, and it isn't pretty. It shows the brain. Oh,
yeah,
scary.
The neurological malfunctions when you eat NutraSweet and aspartame.
This is from Natural News, a great site. It tells you a lot about the things that you should or shouldn't eat.
Got milk. Want to read that?
Got milk? A better question would be, got seizures, migraine headaches, brain tumors, or depression? If the dairy industry has its way, a major cause of these disorders in the form of aspartame could soon become a common ingredient in the milk supply. Bear in mind, this is a chemical that has been linked with a laundry list of health issues, many of which are neurological. In light of the proposed new FDA rule that would allow artificial sweeteners like aspartame to be covertly included in dairy products, we have to consider, is this really a chemical we want hidden within our popular food staple?
Legally laced food with poison and profit.
As reported in Natural News article, U.S. dairy industry petitions the FDA to approve aspartame as a hidden, unlabeled additive in milk, yogurt, eggnog, and cream. The dairy industry is up to its old tricks, attempting to alter the definition of milk to the FDA. If the proposed new rule is approved, artificial sweeteners like aspartame could be added to milk without being listed on the label. What this means is that a majority of dairy, including yogurt cream, eggnog, and whipping cream, can secretly harbor aspartame and turn a nice profit for the artificial sweetener companies in the process. This is great news for the shareholders of NutraSweet and other aspartame peddlers, but not so wonderful for the physical and mental health of the U.S. population.
Save a few calories and fry your brain. If you are ever in doubt about the dangers of aspartame, take a look at the following disorders directly connected to the chemical. Epileptic seizures.
Headaches and migraines.
Severe depression, including suicidal tendencies.
Dizziness and vertigo.
Aggression.
Anxiety.
Phobias.
Irritability.
Personality disorders.
Confusion.
Memory loss.
Slurring of speech.
Hyperactivity.
Irreversible brain damage.
Mental retardation.
As frightening as it is, these are simply the neurological problems associated with the sweetener. Janet Starhall, creator of the Aspartame Detox Program, believes aspartame is the common denominator for over 92 different health symptoms at the root of modern disease. Additionally, many scientists are convinced the chemical is also the cause of a dramatic spike in brain tumors. An article in the Journal of Neuropathy and Experimental Neurology states, evidence potentially implicating aspartame includes an early animal study revealing extremely high incidence of brain tumors in aspartame-fed rats compared to no brain tumors in concurrent controls. The recent finding that aspartame molecules has a mutagenic potential and the close temporal association, aspartame was introduced into the U.S. food and beverage market several years prior to the sharp increase in brain tumor incidence and malignancy. And the dairy industry would like to add the same chemical willy-nilly to the mainstream milk supply without labeling. The insanity continues.
That's amazing.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's out of control.
Why would you do that?
Out of control. something that I thought, do you think, I'd like to know this, because everybody's suffering from vitamin D deficiency, but here's the 10 symptoms of that you need to know to recognize. Here we go. Taking vitamin D while still young may be good for the body in the long run. Results from a study conducted by University of Zurich have confirmed that sufficient amounts of vitamin D taken consistently are necessary to maintain bone health.
Many people believe that maintaining healthy eating habits is enough, but only a few foods naturally contain significant levels of vitamin D, according to Dr. Helke A. Bischoff-Ferrari, a faculty of UVH. In order to get adequate levels of vitamin D through diet alone, 2 servings of fatty fish like salmon or mackerel would have to be consumed every day. It is thus necessary to increase vitamin D levels in the body through sufficient sun exposure and sun supplementation in order to use the sunshine vitamin's full potential for maintaining proper body function. The misconception about maintaining D levels through the diet does have a degree of ground, since vitamin D is not a standalone vitamin. To perform many functions, vitamin D works in cooperation with other vitamins like magnesium, which can be found in leafy green vegetables such as spinach. This unique characteristic of vitamin D has contributed to the management of many chronic illnesses.
The many faces of vitamin D. Decades ago, healthcare professionals thought vitamin D was only good for keeping healthy bones and teeth. Recent advances in science, however, have put this vitamin in the spotlight by revealing its multifaceted role in the proper functioning of the human body and its ability to lower the risks of illnesses not formally associated with it. Despite the recent revelations about the potential of vitamin D, it appears that not everyone appreciates this discovery. The current lifestyle of working indoors has contributed to the growing number of vitamin D deficiency cases worldwide. This is compounded by the fact that not everyone is aware that he or she may be vitamin D deficient. Am I vitamin D deficient?
Here's some things. The flu. In a study published in...
Read that second, too. The best way to discover vitamin D deficiency is to take a blood test that will measure the level of vitamins in your blood. You can either ask a doctor to administer the test or buy a home test kit yourself. However, you are certainly vitamin D deficient if you have any of the following ailments and you need to consult your doctor regarding your preventative as well as curative options as soon as possible.
Okay, here's something. We just have a few minutes. The flu, muscle weakness, psoriasis, chronic kidney disease, diabetes, periodontal disease, asthma, cardiovascular disease, schizophrenia and depression, and cancer.
So that's all vitamin D. And I've got I've got 2 of those. And I've had the flu and muscle weakness. It's pretty common, except for schizophrenia.
Are you sure you don't have that?
Oh, yeah, I have that too. But anyway, prevention is proactive. These various health conditions associated with vitamin D deficiency need not be something to fear. Proactive approach to prevention can assist in the avoidance of the many chronic diseases associated with vitamin D deficiency. For $1,000 could be saved, not to mention the peace of mind, simply at the cost of taking a walk under the sun. Save the umbrellas for the rainy days.
I think that's important. Kids don't get out enough to play in the sunshine.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't had much sunshine this winter. Today was the first time we had a real sunny day for a long time. The sun came out yesterday for a little bit, but it wasn't out much.
I'm going to recommend you go to that site, that'll be it. And join us tomorrow night when we hopefully will have Larry Dorman with us and some union news. And
take care, folks, and enjoy the rest of the night. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good night, everyone.
Good night.